Ooh, it's starting to hurt now. The Merry Monarch Hula Festival has been canceled for this year because of coronavirus concerns. It's a blow for those of us who love hula, for those of us who love Hilo. But across the community, unqualified support for Festival President Luana Covello's difficult decision. Festival of the Pacific was postponed earlier. Yesterday, the Honolulu Museum of Art said film showings, lectures, remaining events in March are canceled starting today. Spring semester classes at the museum school are canceled starting Monday, though the museum itself is open. Just this morning, the Hawaii State Art Museum, Hi Sam, notified the public that programs and galleries are closing starting Monday, and that happens through April. The University of Hawaii is taking all classes online after spring break through April 15th. Chaminade has made similar plans there, and there are no cancellations yet, however, for Hawaii's public schools. Spring break is on starting Monday, but they are planning for possible school closures. I mean, this would have a huge effect on parents across the state, and students too, of course. And speaking of students, one of the most vulnerable populations in Hawaii are the unsheltered, and that includes Hawaii's more than 3,600 school students in unstable housing. According to the DOE, the number of those students has stayed about the same over the past 10 years. There are nearly 3,000 students living in unstable housing here on Oahu alone. I'd heard from high school students about growing up with nowhere to do homework. You know, you had to perch it on your knee or on the cooler top. And then the rain comes and gets the whole thing wet and torn. Let's find out what school is like for these students. I'm so honored to be here with three public school teachers who've agreed to talk with me and you about their experiences with homeless students. Now, I'm going to use the word houseless here because I've been told that this is less hurtful, and it actually does mean something different. What we're talking about is people without permanent shelter. So we'll go ahead here, and I wonder if we could just kind of go around the table. Would you introduce yourself, Brandon?
Hi, my name is Brandon Gallarita. I teach 8th grade English language arts at Central Middle School.
Uh-huh. Okay, perfect.
Hi, my name is Ellie Cantar, and I am a 9th through 12th grade ELL teacher at Farrington High School.
And my name is April Hisatake. I am the curriculum coordinator at Royal School. We're a K-5 elementary school.
Thank you so much for coming in today, because 2020 kind of started out with some wet and chilly weather, and it just does get you a little worried about how people are handling it if they have no permanent home. Maybe could we start with you, Brandon? Can you tell which of your students are facing houselessness?
It's interesting thinking of houselessness. And when I tend to think of houselessness, I don't necessarily think about no shelter at all. I think of it into more broader terms of unstable housing in the first place. And so it's not necessarily students who don't have a home, but they tend to be between homes as well.
Well, what's it like for you, Ellie, in your high school classrooms?
Very similar to what Brandon was saying. There's a lot of students that come to school, and you'll see that there's maybe something going on or they're facing some kind of barriers. But unless I sit down and have a conversation with a student and they kind of explicitly tell me what's going on, it's hard to tell.
So there are no outward signs, really?
I think it's a little different in elementary school because we have the kids all day. And when you ask about how we know about the kids, that's the thing. I think that's the main thing in our classroom, to know them. And when you build that kind of relational trust with them, they open up, especially in elementary. They'll tell you, and that's how you will know. We also have forms that the parents fill out, so we know exactly who are houseless students.
We do.
There's an information that we get from the office, but also for the kids, it's mostly I like to know from them, you know, because then it builds that trust. And when they feel safe enough, then they'll open up, and then the magic can happen between just kind of opening up and having that safe place.
How many houseless kids do you think you have?
Or
do you
know? At our school, we have 27 students mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. We only have 350 somewhat students mm-hmm. total. It varies. It's yeah. actually been kind of less now because of the housing. We're at the beaches. They had sweeps, so mm-hmm. it's very transient, and they'll have to move to a different beach or elsewhere for housing. So that's the hard part, too.
Well, do you know when that's happening?
No, and then the students won't know either. So yeah. You build the trust, you pour in, and then one day they're not there. And then, of course, we contact parents, we try to find out, and we find out, yeah, they had to move, they moved.
How do other students respond?
I think that's the thing, too, is the modeling. We are all the same. I mean, nobody's treated any differently, and especially the little ones, I think, they look up to the teacher. So if they see you treating everyone with kindness, they follow suit. They want to be like you. Oh. And then, yeah, so then it becomes a community within the little classroom. So it's a really cool thing to see.
Oh, the beauty of elementary school.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ellie, I mean, can you imagine that kind of exchanging going on at the high school level?
Yeah, I think that a lot of it is really similar at the high school level, really making time to build those relationships with students. So part of it in high school, too, is you can have some very real conversations with teenagers about topics and about issues in ways that you can't with younger students.
Well, what do they seem to think about houselessness?
In terms of the factors that lead to something like that, there's still a lot of misunderstanding. There's still not a lot of talk about topics like that. So I think trying to use the classroom as a place to normalize those discussions, where it becomes something that you can talk about, or where you know, students begin to see, like, I can take some ownership in my community and I can make a difference to help people.
The one story that I can't help but think about is the student who told me that I didn't want to stay at home because I didn't want to sleep on the balcony because there was too much going on inside the house. So I wanted to leave my house and go stay with Auntie because it was more calm there. How can you care about school when you're so worried about, am I going to be okay today? And that's the thing that breaks my heart, because a lot of the times, I'm sure the kids are saying, it's great and all that you care about what I want to do tomorrow and what I want to be when you grow up, but what about today? What about tomorrow? And it's a reality that I think I don't recognize personally enough myself, and it causes me to seriously slow down and really think about the deeper reasons why students act the way they act or treat others the way they do. Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, but it's one that's an incredible privilege to be able to be a part of as well.
We don't even think of wearing clean clothes or, I mean, what we're going to eat. But these kids deal with that every day. And then we expect them to learn their ABCs. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, it's kind of people over program many mm-hmm. times, you know, to know that you matter. We see you and you matter. And just hearing it going from intermediate to high school, yeah. It's the best feeling for me, because it's carrying on. And who knows mm-hmm. what kind of effect we're going to have, right?
Then,
if we
right?
all, yeah.
Ellie, can you imagine people in the community doing something else that might help somehow?
One of the things for high school students is that they finish school and then many of them then have to go and help take care of siblings and things like that as well. So if there are community programs available, making those spaces that teenagers can go with elementary students, where there's something for kind of across that K-12.
I really think that's a great idea, you know, just a student, a place for young kids and K-12 and perhaps even the family to go, mm-hmm. you know, after school hours as well, is an excellent idea. Actually, at Central Middle School, we just opened up. We were thankful to have been donated a lot of stoves and sinks and supplies to have it's still in the process of being flushed out of, you know, what the expectations are and all the fine details, mm-hmm. but a place where the community can come to use the stoves to cook a meal. Mm-hmm. We have washers and dryers as well.
Really?
And so, yeah, so it's really incredible. And to think about the school not as just a place for learning, but a place that's rooted in the community and acts as this, I guess, a foundation. I mean, if education is so important to our state, our country, and our world, maybe it shouldn't just be the learning part, but fostering a community part that's centered around ideals that are really good for the community as a whole.
Boy, but I'm amazed and thrilled to hear how you're thinking about it there at Central.
Building those relationships with kids is just so fundamental, and it's building those relationships not only with teachers, but any other adult that's in their life in some ways, because oftentimes it's the small things that you can do for students that really make a big difference. So if
like
one thing that I've noticed at the high school level is because students are moving around a lot, getting them access to a free bus pass all of a sudden means that no matter where they're living, they can stay in that same school community. And without building those relationships, you never are really able to figure out what small things you can do to help that student.
It's crazy to have three educators in this room that are genuinely thinking about these questions and how we can make not just our schools a better place, but our society as a whole.
Well, it gives a member of the general public like me a lot of hope.
Yeah, hope. That's the word, though. I think because teachers out there who are listening, if every single one of us, if you think, why do we go into this profession? And really delve into it. It's not the money. it's because we want to make a difference. So at our school, our administration, our principal, she allowed us to go back to that, our vision, our why. Why do we do this? Mm-hmm. We all came up with our mission statement, which is to like positively affect students by believing in them and giving them the skills to be the best they can be, whatever that is. If all teachers go in with that to remember why we're doing this, the kids will be empowered. They will be empowered to know, hey, I matter. I can do this even through these circumstances. They learn grit. They learn perseverance because it's something that can't be taken away from them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm grateful for what these people do every day. Brandon Gallarita, Central Middle, 8th grade English teacher, Ellie Cantor Farrington, 9 to 12 ELL, and April Hisatake from Royal Elementary. Mahalo also to the team at Department of Education and Toby Portner, Homeless Student Coordinator. It's been a pleasure working with you all. You know, Chanel Honda told me about Purposity. It's an app that connects users to public school student needs. She says it really works. Purposity.